At A-Law Radio is where you can find me. If you haven't yet voted for Monday MVP, you've got the opportunity on our show Twix at Amy After Hours and also on our Facebook page. And within the next, we'll call it 90 minutes, we will definitely have candidates for TD of the Week because that's how we usher in a Touchdown Tuesday. So see you Monday. Time to move forward. See you Week 5. Time to move forward and prep for Week number 6, which is crazy. Lot of questions around the teams that have started out, say, 1-4 or 2-3. There's a couple of teams in the AFC North that I wouldn't have expected to begin as slowly as they have. Joe Burrow said the Bengals are nowhere near a championship caliber team. That was his assessment on Sunday. And there are just as many questions about the Cleveland Browns from their head coach, Kevin Stefanski.
I have to coach better. As offensive coaches, we have to coach better. As players, we have to play better. Deshaun can play better. He will play better. He's had some obviously good moments, and then there's times that we have to play better around him. But he's committed to getting better. We're committed as an offense to putting our guys in position to succeed.
Right now, it's a lot of morose and frustrated Browns fans that I'm hearing from on social. So into that malaise, we welcome Mary Kay Cabot, who is a longtime Browns insider for both Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer, and routinely joins us at least once a season. Mary Kay, you've covered this team a long time. What would you say is the temperature around the Browns facilities right now?
Well, I'll tell you what, it is not what anybody expected. It's not where anyone believed that this team would be right now. I remember talking to Myles Garrett and watching his hype video before the season opener, and he was talking about the mission was to win the Super Bowl this year. So that's where the minds of these players were at. And this is not at all what anybody was hoping for, what anyone expected. And they are in gut check, soul searching mode right now. And it's really kind of a difficult time here.
A couple of why questions. Why do you believe the expectations were so high for 2024?
I really believe that these guys looked around at this roster and saw all the talent on this football team. You have Myles Garrett, Denzel Ward, Joel Bitonio, Amari Cooper, Deshaun Watson. A lot of Pro Bowl players, a lot of veteran experience on this team. And I really think that they just felt that this was the year they could put it all together and that it was going to happen for them. And it's just really been unfortunate for everybody involved that it hasn't come together at all.
And then my second why question would be, why do they believe it's been such a struggle to start?
It's a complicated answer. It really is. It's a very, very complicated answer. But I think it's too simple to say that it's Deshaun Watson. I really do. I think that it's just too easy to go there and say that he is the reason why they are 1-4 right now. Certainly he's part of the reason. He's not coming off of a good game at all against the Commanders. But it's just much more complex than that. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with the fact that they were not healthy on the offensive line to start the season. They haven't been able to protect Deshaun. Amari Cooper got off to a very slow start. David Njoku missed 3 games. It was a lot of things. The fact that they were running a brand new offense, Deshaun Watson coming off of shoulder surgery, the defense somehow forgot how to tackle. A lot of things just kind of came, you know, conspired together to result in this 1-4 start. And it really kind of has been a shocker for everyone.
How much hope is there, again, inside the building that they can turn it around?
Well, there's a lot of talk that they can get it turned around, but I do sense that there is some, I would have to say, maybe some doubt on the part of people involved about where this thing is going to go at 1-4, just because it's not like they're coming off of a close loss. It's not like they're coming off of 3 or 4 games where they just almost won the game. This past game that they lost to the Commanders, it was one of the ugliest losses that I've seen in all of my time covering the Browns. It's right up there with some of the worst that I've seen. So I think that's what I think gives people pause is the fact that, you know, they're talking about this team doesn't have an identity and this team doesn't have any rhythm and they don't know what they're good at and they need to be talking to the coaches. And, you know, when you're doing that kind of soul searching to find your way, it's kind of difficult to pull out of the tailspin.
We're always excited to have Mary Kay Cabot with us on After Hours with Amy Lawrence, longtime Browns beat writer for Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. Processing, a lot of processing happening around the team after the first 5 weeks of the season. So, Mary Kay, we heard from Coach Kevin Stefanski on Sunday that he's sticking with Deshaun Watson. What were his reasons for that choice?
And we talked to him again about this today, the day after the game, and he 100% believes that it's just a systemic problem on offense. It's not just Deshaun Watson, but it's a lot of those things that I mentioned before. It's injuries along the offensive line, the inability to protect Deshaun, which I know it's not as simple as that. It's everyone together works on that protection and getting rid of the ball quickly enough and those kinds of things. But Kevin Stefanski really believes that it is a system-wide, scheme-wide offensive problem, not just a Deshaun problem. So we'll have to see. I wrote a column today saying that I think that he should turn the play calling over to Ken Dorsey. I just think they need to do something to shake things up, to change things up. And if he's going to stick with Deshaun, then something's got to give.
I saw that column. I'm glad you mentioned it. I was going to bring it up. What do we know about other alternatives? How could that pose fresh perspective?
Well, you never really know if it's going to work or not, but it's something that you can try. It's something that you can do that you can always go back on it if you had to. I think it would be easier to turn the play calling over to Ken Dorsey, and then if you decided 3 or 4 games into it that that wasn't working, I don't think it would be the end of the world if Kevin had to take it back. I think it would be difficult to bench Deshaun and then try to reinstate him 3 or 4 games down the road. And if it doesn't work, then really sometimes all is lost. I do think that shaking it up might help in the same way. Look at what happened to the Bills last year. Mm. Ken Dorsey was not the problem necessarily on that offense, but nevertheless, it did the trick in some way. They went 6-1 after they fired Ken Dorsey. The offensive numbers really didn't change all that much, but there was something about the fact that it seemed to wake up that offense or wake up that football team. So in the same way, I think it could possibly happen for the Browns, where changing it up just kind of brings everybody back together.
You can find Mary Kay's columns on Cleveland.com/Browns. It's covered the team for a long time and with us here After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Well, let's talk about the quarterback position, because I put a post up on Sunday watching the offense, which right now is last in the league in total yards through 5 weeks. And I mentioned the guaranteed money for Deshaun. And I got back a flood. Now, this is fans, but a flood of fans who believe a change is necessary. This is an embarrassing situation. Former NFL quarterback Dan Orlovsky's called it the worst situation in the NFL. I know that it's not all his fault, but what do you see with the quarterback specifically?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, in the first 3-4 games of the season, I really did believe that Deshaun just wasn't getting enough help. He wasn't getting protected. He's been sacked 26 times. The Browns, I think, overestimated the ability of their offensive tackles to come back from their knee surgeries. These guys have either not been playing or they have been struggling. There have been plenty of issues along that offensive line that haven't helped. Amari Cooper got off to a very slow start. David Njoku wasn't out there. There were a lot of reasons why this offense just was not playing up to its standards. But this past game was really, really a rough game. I have to watch it over again. But this was the first game when I looked out there and I thought, something just is not right here. And I really did wonder if Deshaun wasn't more of the reason than I believed he was in like the first 3 games of the season, or the first 4 games of the season. So I don't think benching him is the right decision right now, because I think, again, it would be very, very hard to go back to him after 3 or 4 games if it doesn't work out.
True.
But they've got to figure out a way that he can get the ball out of his hand quickly. Everyone is just blitzing the heck out of them. They're not picking it up. They're not handling the stunts. They're not handling the games. Deshaun is really, really struggling against the blitz. That's when most of the sacks are coming. They have to find a way that he can function, because right now it is so dysfunctional that he cannot move the chains.
There was a moment in the game against the Commanders where it appeared, now this is on TV, but it appeared as though Kevin Stefanski wanted to go for it on fourth down, and Deshaun decided not to, walked off the field, went to the sidelines. At least on social media, there was a lot made of that exchange. Any talk about it afterwards?
Yes, there was plenty of talk about that afterwards. And when you break it all down and when you talk to the people involved, he walked off of that field because there were 12 men in the huddle and they had just burned a timeout a couple of plays before that, and there was still plenty of time left, and they didn't want to be burning another timeout there so soon after that. So he walked off the field because there were 12 men in the huddle. He knew that they were going to just have to take the delay and go ahead and kick that field goal.
Gotcha.
So it was a miscommunication, but he's taking plenty of heat for that.
Mm. Where does Nick Chubb fit into the equation, Mary Kay?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I don't know that I would bring Nick Chubb back into the fold right now. Coming off of his second major knee reconstruction, this is going to be a monumental moment in his career and in Browns history. And I don't know if it's right to bring him back at a time when the team is struggling so much, when you don't know really where they're going yet. I think I would probably wait another couple of weeks to see if it is actually worth bringing Nick Chubb back into the fold right now. So it's a difficult decision.
How healthy is he?
Well, he looks great.
Good.
Almost surreal. Yes, he looks fantastic. And to see him trying to make this historic comeback, I don't know that anybody has ever come back from two major knee reconstructions like this in the NFL. So it would be a historic comeback. I just don't know right now if it's the right thing to do. But he certainly looks great. He's worked so incredibly hard. And this was supposed to be an incredible comeback story, one that ended up in some kind of a playoff campaign. I just don't know if that's going to happen right now.
You mentioned earlier in our conversation that the defense also bears a role in this. We know Myles Garrett has been dealing with some different aches and pains and injuries. As you watch this defense, why do you think it's not playing at the level of last season?
That's been really, really puzzling. I think the defense, when I look back to last year, I really tried to let people know that I thought this team wasn't as battle-tested last year as perhaps they needed to be to succeed when it came time to playing a good playoff team like the Texans, and they got into that wild card game, and they just really weren't ready for the level of intensity and the level of talent that they were facing there. And if you look at some of the quarterbacks that the Browns faced last year, they just didn't have this gauntlet of great quarterbacks. They played Clayton Tune instead of Kyler Murray. They played Trevor Siemian instead of Aaron Rodgers, Jake Browning instead of Joe Burrow. And the list kind of went on and on that way. I just don't think that this defense really played the best of the best last season. And they kind of ran it back as a defense. And they probably could have used a little bit more talent on the team.
You've got the same record in Cleveland as do the Cincinnati Bengals. Pittsburgh Steelers, they've dropped two games in a row. Ravens appear to be surging now and have maybe gotten everything together, but the division isn't quite as stout as it was a season ago. What are your impressions of the AFC North so far?
Well, I don't think anyone would have believed you if you told them what the picture would look like after five games of the season. No one would have thought that it would go like this. Who would have believed that the Bengals and the Browns would be 1-4 right now? I always thought this would be a fight to the finish in the AFC North. Who knows? Maybe it still will be. I think the fact that the Ravens got off to a slow start and only have three victories right now, I think that should give both the Browns and the Bengals hope that maybe they can get this thing turned around. All it takes is a couple of victories before you're sort of right back in the thick of it. And who knows, it's a very, very long season. Anything can still happen. There can be injuries. There can be dry periods, dry spells by a team. So the fact that they're not too far behind the Ravens, I think, gives them hope that perhaps they can catch up and maybe good things can still happen.
How many times have you heard the name Joe Flacco from fans after he goes out and throws for nearly 360 yards and three touchdowns on Sunday?
Oh, not just Joe Flacco, but how about Baker Mayfield? Here are poor Browns fans watching this team at 1-4, watching Deshaun Watson struggle, watching the Browns soul search and scratch their heads, and then you have to turn on highlights and only to see Baker Mayfield and Joe Flacco out there having tremendous success. So it's not a great time right now to be a Browns fan.
Has it been common this season to hear the booing from the crowd?
Yeah, there's been plenty of booing from the crowd, and that's sad. It's really sad to go to Cleveland Browns Stadium, now Huntington Bank Field, and hear that kind of booing. I know it's hurtful to the players. They're trying everything they possibly can to get this thing turned around. Mm. That's a place where the Browns went 8-1 last season. They're struggling at home. They're struggling on the road. And, of course, the Browns fans are well-traveled. They come everywhere the Browns go. Just been a very, very difficult time right now.
Hope has certainly taken a hit in these first 5 weeks. But as you point out, there's still a long way to go. It's always great to catch up with Mary Kay Cabot. And that's how you can find her online at Mary Kay Cabot, Browns beat writer, Cleveland.com, the Plain Dealer. Mary Kay, thank you so much. Good to talk to you.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Amy.
So just want to point out, because there was so much talk about it, Mary Kay says that the exchange between Kevin Stefanski and Deshaun Watson, when Coach wanted to go for a fourth down and Deshaun walked off the field. Now, this was held up as an example of how the two were not on the same page. And I'm not kidding you. I saw the phrase Deshaun quit on his team. Now, that may or may not be the case, but it certainly wasn't evidenced in that particular play, in that particular moment. As Mary Kay points out, and I'm so glad I asked, there were 12 men on the field. Deshaun realized it. They did not want to burn another timeout because they had just burned one early in that half against the Commanders. And for that reason, he walked off the field, recognizing they would need a timeout or they would get a flag, in which case they wouldn't be going for it on fourth down anyway. So yeah, I saw a lot of, I can't believe this, he quit on the team, this is dysfunction, this is dissension, how can you ever respect him again? Now, there are other reasons why those things may be true and those claims may be true, but it's not that moment. Good stuff with Mary Kay Cabot. I think it's significant what she said about the spirit inside the Browns facilities, that this is a little different. There's maybe not as much belief that they can turn this thing around, or maybe it's more like shell shock because of the way that they started and how badly it's gone off the rails. Lots of Browns fans looking for answers. And she mentions the article that she wrote about Kevin Stefanski and play calling. And funny enough, she was the one who asked the question of him on Monday about turning those duties over to OC Ken Dorsey.
I think there's a bunch of different things, Mary Kay, that we want to look at and see how we're doing from a operations standpoint on offense. I think Ken's been an outstanding partner in all of this. So those are the type of things that I will always look at. But really, it just gets back to making sure that we're putting our guys in position.
She's in it. Mary Kay is in it, right in the middle of it, which is awesome. At A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. Woo! Heading into a Tuesday, which is not a Monday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
So Cleveland Browns fans still have a reason to be excited and smile if you also cheer for the Guardians. And I had asked Mary Kay earlier, not on the show, but when we were communicating back and forth about the Guardians. And she said her husband's a huge fan and went to the game on Tuesday, game two of the ALDS between the Guardians and a familiar foe in these Detroit Tigers. And man, they had the benefit of a Tarek Skubal on the mound, which changes everything. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. He was brilliant. The probable, I would say likely, future AL Cy Young Award winner is nearly perfect through his 7 innings pitched, and he only threw 92 balls. 7 innings of scoreless baseball against the Guardians, scatters 3 hits, walks no one, and strikes out 8. Absolutely awesome to see him pitch on this stage. But this was still a scoreless game going into the 9th inning between the Tigers and the Guardians. Now, there were guys left on base. A couple of big defensive plays, couple of double plays that really mattered and kind of kept this one scoreless, preserved it. Cleveland didn't have nearly as many as opportunities because of how well Skubal pitched. They only left a couple of guys on base. But the Tigers, they got guys out there. 1 for 8 with runners in scoring position. And of course, that was the big blow in the 9th, leaving 9 Tigers on base. So the Guardians were kind of getting in and out of trouble throughout this game. The Tigers were just looking for that big blow, that clutch hit, to be able to take advantage of what they got from Skubal. And yeah, for AJ Hinch, it started with his ace.
It's led by Tarik. I mean, he's as emotional as you can get at the right time, at the right volume. He's able to reset and do his thing. And I mean, this is what October is built for. I mean, he's built for October too.
Oh, he definitely is. And I look forward to seeing more of him, though this series is now tied 1-1. So I guess we don't know for sure. Nothing in October is a sure thing beyond this point. They get to the 9th inning. The Tigers get a couple of guys on base, bringing up Kerry Carpenter.
2-2, Sweeney takes off, fly ball right field. This one's deep. Going back is Brennan. He's looking up, and it's gone! Oh, man! Kerry Carpenter with 2 outs in the 9th. A 3-run bomb, and the Tigers take the lead 3-0.
This was against the Guardians' brilliant closer, and we'll talk about that part of it, the pitching for the Guardians coming up. He gets a strikeout and a pop out. And so you've already got 2 outs before a pair of singles in front of Kerry Carpenter, and he blasts that ball. The joy, I'm telling you, the smile on his face, it's still there. I know it's still there, even though I hope that the man is sleeping after the work that he's done. It was pretty incredible to see. It's what I love about October. It's where legends are made, and very often, it's not just the superstars. It's not just the millionaires. Nah, it's guys that you would never expect. Because that's what it takes to get to this point. That's what it's taken for the Tigers to go back to mid-August and be 10 games back in the American League Central to rally with one of the best records in baseball over the final 6 weeks of the regular season. It takes all hands on deck, if you will. And many of these Tigers are young enough that they've never experienced the postseason before. Carpenter hits the home run of his life in that moment.
I wasn't sitting on it, but I was just on time for his hardest pitch in that cutter, and I was just like zoning in for it to start in a certain zone, and my instincts took over, and he missed his spot, so took advantage of it.
When he refers to the closer, he's talking about Emmanuel Clase, who many people call the best closer in baseball. 423 feet. He blasted it with 2 outs. This is against a guy who had not given up a run since August 30th and led the American League with the 47 saves.
Yeah, I knew it was gone, and it was just an amazing feeling being able to come through for this team, because our pitchers are keeping us in these games like crazy, and it's amazing to be able to come through for our pitching staff.
It was a lot to ask of Clause A because it was only his second multi-inning appearance of this season, meaning that he came in the game in the eighth and was still out there in the ninth. And for Stephen Vogt, it's one of those calls that you make. You wonder, how could it have gone differently? But everything in this game, because it was so tense and it was so tight, every little decision could be one that tipped the balance or tipped the game in the favor of one team or the other. So what did he say to his closer after the game?
Emmanuel's been locked down all year. He's been nearly perfect, like you said. And, you know, he's human too. These things are going to happen. And it's unfortunate the timing of when it did, but at the same time, he's going to have the ball in the ninth again. You know, this is the best closer in the game for a reason. And they just happened to get him tonight.
I think it's really important to point out always in these situations where people get upset about a particular decision or a guy who gives up a home run or throws an interception. You can use whatever sport it is that you want to, and you can reflect on moments that maybe could have gone one way or another that where a game is hanging in the balance. But the team would not be in this situation without Clause A. I think that's really clear. Without this guy and his 47 saves and the fact that he was nearly automatic once he got on the mound for Cleveland all year, they're not the winners of the AL Central going away. They're not hosting the American League Division Series without having to go through their series. I mean, they're not in this position. I could go on and on about it, right? But they're not in this position if they don't have Clause A. And so, yeah, in this particular case, I think it's just important to give credit to the hitters, first of all, but also the moves made by A.J. Hinch to put them in this situation. I mean, the Guardians won 92 games this year and earned a bye over the first week. A lot of that is because of their bullpen, specifically Clause A. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So now you've got the Tigers ready to head home. First time for a home playoff game in a decade.
We now have two games at our place. We know it's going to be electric. We know Detroit has waited a really long time for a playoff game. We're going to have a couple of them and a chance to take control of this series.
Why is it that the Tigers, the Royals, some of these other teams that had to fight and scratch and claw just to get into the playoffs, why is it that they have confidence when the game is still hanging in the balance? Maybe other guys would get nervous. In the case of the Tigers, very few of them have been in the playoffs before. A lot of their experience and wisdom comes from their manager, of course, who's a World Series manager. But from Carpenter's perspective, yeah, they actually relish these opportunities.
Really confident because they have a really good bullpen, but we have just as good of a bullpen, and so when it's 0-0 going into the late innings, at least for me, I feel really confident that our pitchers are going to go out there and keep throwing up zeros because they've been doing it all year.
So we do what we do because they do what they do, and they're going to keep us in games. It's the first time since 1995 that all four division series open 1-1. Which means we're going to get more terrific calls, more terrific radio play-by-play from Dan Dickerson, who's the voice of the Tigers. Also, in this particular game, I spent a bunch of time listening to Tom Hamilton on Guardians Radio. He's awesome, too. He's one of the best. One of the benefits of being a radio play-by-play guy or gal, because there are some women in different sports too, versus TV, is that if you're in radio, you get to do the games all the way through the playoffs as long as your team is alive. In TV, the local broadcast, the local outlets end up losing the games and losing the rights, of course, after a certain point in the postseason. And so it's actually one of the cool things about radio is that you're able to call the championship round or even the playoff series should your team get to that point. Otherwise, with TV, you're watching like everybody else when it gets to October in this case or when it gets to the postseason. At A-Law Radio, love to be able to connect with you. Coming up next, our candidates for TD of the Week. And you'll need to vote at Amy After Hours or on our Facebook page. Monday MVP, that one, if it's not already closed, it is already closed. Actually, it was very close. Do you want to know something? We'll have to do the big reveal a little bit later in the show. The winner came down to 3%. I think it might be the closest Monday MVP poll we've ever had. And so we'll reveal that to you as well as your candidates for TD of the week. We've got the latest on some injuries in the NFL too. And while we're talking about Cleveland sports, a familiar face popping up in a different region of the Buckeye State. 855-212-4227. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, and will the Chiefs able to rely on an old friend to keep them unbeaten?
Chiefs have first down and goal to go at the 5-yard line of New Orleans. Digging in against this number one red zone defense, given off to Kareem Hunt, following his blockers, he's into the end zone! Touchdown, Kansas City!
102 yards rushing, and that score for Kareem Hunt as the Chiefs finished off the Saints 26-13. Call courtesy of the Chiefs Radio Network. Patrick Mahomes threw for 331. Juju Smith-Schuster, 7 catches, 130 yards. Travis Kelce hauled in 9 passes for 70 yards as the Chiefs are 5-0, while the Saints' losing streak is 3. They fell to 2-3, and worse, Derek Carr left with an oblique injury, MRI to come. Raiders still evaluating their quarterback situation after they pulled Gardner Minshew for the second time this year for Aiden O'Connell. Jabril Peppers, the Patriots' safety, pleaded not guilty after he was arrested for assault and battery, strangulation, and drug possession believed to be cocaine.
He called me that morning. I knew what was going on, and the NFL, we've informed the NFL what was going on, and we're still gathering information.
That's head coach Gerard Mayo. Packers and wideout Romeo Doubs said to be moving forward after he was suspended for the game against the Rams after he missed 2 days of practice. Baseball playoffs, a mainstay in Kansas City, getting the Royals off on the right foot.
Here's the pitch. Salvi drills it high in the air, deep left field, no doubt about it. It's a home run, a game-tying blast from the Royals captain.
Salvador Perez igniting a 4-run inning as the Royals double the Yankees 4-2. Call courtesy of the Royals Radio Network. Mikel Garcia had 4 hits in an RBI. Tommy Pham knocked in a run as they chased Carlos Rodon after 3 2/3, gave up 4 runs on 7 hits. Series tied at 1. In the other game, Cary Carpenter, a 3-run shot in the top of the ninth off Emmanuel Clase as the Tigers shut down the Guardians 3-0.
Emmanuel's been locked down all year. He's been nearly perfect, like you said. And, you know, he's human too. These things are going to happen, and it's unfortunate the timing of when it did, but at the same time, he's going to have the ball in the ninth again. You know, this is the best closer in the game for a reason.
Cleveland manager Stephen Vogt, as Tarek Skubal was terrific but didn't factor. He struck out 8 over 7 innings of 3-hit ball. Series now tied at 1. I'm Marco Belletti.
After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Derek Carr is injured. Does that change a potential reunion with Davante Adams? Now, I don't know how long he's going to be out. Maybe not a ton of answers yet for either Derek Carr or Dennis Allen. But yeah, early in the fourth quarter, he walked off the field and went to the locker room.
It wasn't even the hit, honestly. But just when I dropped back and torqued to throw that ball to tip. That's when I felt it.
The game's going on. The trainers told me he's got a left side injury and he's out. And so I haven't gotten any updates on that, guys.
He goes 18 of 28 in this game. And with the inability of the Saints to run the ball against the Chiefs, he ends up finding more success early in the passing attack, though there was that first drive that ended with the interception. Not really sure what he was seeing there, but 165 yards, a couple of touchdowns, including the deep shot to Rashid Shaheed, and that's something that we've seen a lot from the Saints earlier, these longer connections with Shaheed. So yeah, there was some success there, but not nearly as prolific as what we saw earlier in the season, and that's becoming a common theme. They need Alvin Kamara to be able to run the ball so that they can set up the pass. He's got guys that he can throw to. I don't know if you all saw the post from, it was a member of Chris Olave's family because the Twix account also has the name Olave on it. Not many targets to Chris Olave. In fact, four passes thrown his way, only two catches for 10 yards. You need to have him more involved as well. But it doesn't help when your quarterback, your veteran quarterback, is walking to the locker room early and is in a ton of pain.
Not good, but you know, we'll get an MRI and all that kind of stuff tomorrow and figure it out. But for me not to be out there with my guys, no matter the situation, it takes something.
So this was a Saints team that's now dropped three in a row, has fallen below 500 in a very competitive NFC South. And I know two of the games have come by 3 points or fewer. Two of the losses have come by 3 points or fewer. This one, I don't want to say they weren't in it because that's not true. The Chiefs put 10 points on the board in that fourth quarter. Neither team scored in the third officially. And Kansas City got all the way into the red zone when Mahomes hit Juju Smith-Schuster in the hands. He doesn't catch the ball. It pops up in the air, and it's then snagged for an interception by Colin Saunders, as Kevin Harlan termed it, a thick pick, because it's a defensive lineman who weighs well more than 300 pounds.
That was a thick pick! That was a thick pick!
It was. So that was a moment that could have potentially changed things for the Saints. It definitely got them back in the game because they prevented the Chiefs from scoring. They turned around and marched. I think it was 65 yards the other direction. So they had a shorter field. They get into the end zone on their own end. They missed the point after attempt, but still at this point, they're trailing by three. It's just the Chiefs then turned around themselves, and their response was, yeah, 50-yarder for Juju Smith-Schuster. So they go right back to him to be able to set them up for the Xavier Worthy touchdown. So they were within striking distance until that fourth quarter. Just some mistakes and the inability to run the ball, only getting 46 yards on the ground. And actually, I was hearing multiple analysts encourage them to stop trying to run the ball.
Chiefs showing blitz, is selling out, coming after Carr. He throws it up for grabs, left side. The pass will be incomplete at the 10-yard line. Mason Tipton trying to get it over his shoulder. Chamari Connor was with him in coverage. Pressure, coverage, holding on downs. The Chiefs lead by 10 and have it back at their own 42.
So yeah,
offensively, we really couldn't get anything going in the run game or in the passing game. You know, defensively, I felt like we made too many mistakes early on in the game. I don't think we tackled as well as we needed to. And so I think for the first time this year, I felt like, you know, we didn't play the way we're capable of playing. So I was disappointed in that.
Dennis Allen and his offense running into a fourth down stop with a couple of minutes to go. But what he was disappointed in, the inability to run the ball, mentioning just the 46 rush yards before he hit that highlight. So, yeah, they were kind of stopped with what they've done well. And Alvin Kamara really is a problem for a lot of other defenses. But against the Chiefs, unable to find a lot of room. And Chris Jones, he wreaks havoc. Such a great pass rusher, too. They were able to get to him enough that he had to get rid of the ball quickly. And maybe that's what happened on that first possession. Not able to wait until his target gets downfield a little more, having to throw it up there in the face of pressure. Just officially one sack, but nine other quarterback hits, which can definitely take their toll on a QB, and now he's dealing with an oblique injury. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Andy Reid knows that they're winning in spite of injuries, and so no team is going to feel sorry for you. Every team right now is dealing with their own injuries. It's obviously more frustrating if it happens to your quarterback or some of your guys that you feel are so instrumental to winning. But here are the Chiefs at 5-0, and this really does speak to culture. It speaks to depth. It speaks to having guys in your locker room who you know are familiar with what you do. So that's a big deal when it comes to Juju Smith-Schuster or Kareem Hunt, who are now brought back by the Chiefs because they're familiar with Patrick Mahomes and the way that the Chiefs want to do business. It's After Hours on our Facebook page, also online at Amy After Hours. When we get that TD of the week poll up, we'll get to those candidates coming up next hour. We were still trying to figure out exactly what it is that we wanted to do. So we weren't able to roll them out at this last segment. Other injuries that people are paying attention to or asking about. The Derek Carr is one we're going to have to wait on. We've been wondering about Mike McCarthy and, well, not wondering about him and his injuries. I'm not worried about Mike McCarthy, but wondering about the Dallas defense able to get a win. And I think they were put in a tough position because of the number of turnovers by Dak and the offense, mostly just red zone issues for them. But wondering when they might get reinforcements on their defense. So people were asking about Micah Parsons, who right now is dealing with a high ankle sprain.
He was in for treatment, so I'll probably know, I'll have a better gauge of that Wednesday if he has a chance for Detroit. But he's got some work to do. You know, saw him, you know, Saturday before we left. But, we knew this week was going to be a stretch. So we'll have a better gauge once we get to Wednesday.
So the Dallas Cowboys, along with the Chiefs, had the benefit of dealing with injuries and trying to figure out how to plug holes with winning records. That's not the case for the 1-4 Los Angeles Rams. And we've been talking about how much Matthew Stafford misses Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua. Even talked about it with our friend Michael Duarte on last night's show following this Rams loss. And so lots of questions for Sean McVay about when we might see Cooper Kupp.
Here's what I would say. You know, that is something that in an ideal world, yeah, he's ready to go. He had some specific work that he was doing with Reggie over the last couple days, and we were planning on visiting with him, but the Raiders was always an optimistic target date, you know, just based on a few weeks back that we had set, but by no means is that guaranteed.
It's a work in progress through 5 weeks now, if you can believe that, though. Wowzers. At A-Law Radio, and then our phone number, 855-212-4227. Yes, we will get to TD of the Week options next hour. It's a spirited debate. Also, even as Cleveland moves forward with its postseason hopes and dreams, a familiar face has popped up in a different region of Ohio. We'll get to that as well. Whew, take a breath. We are deep into October, peeps. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.